You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by footballstadiumprince.com. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case Elder scenario for City for right more. Here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally
Matt
redeems
Elder.
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
And another goal!
And it is now 2-0 Minneapolis City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
It is Super Cup game week, friends. This is The People's Pitch, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City Soccer Club. I'm your host, John, and with me is the voice of Minneapolis City game day, the Nate Morales. Nate, if we weren't already busy, we're about to get a whole lot busier. Are you ready, my friend?
It's funny because I totally forgot that we even had a U21 game this weekend. I'm like so focused on Super Cup and like recapping. I'm like, what's happened? What's on the calendar? It's like, oh, the U21s have a game you reminded me about. Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully we'll be able to keep all this straight this summer.
Well, we're going to have to do our best.
I believe in us.
But folks, there's only two of us. So
hang on. Oh, I did sign us up for Instagram today. So,
well, hey,
that'll
there
be great.
We go. Are we influencers?
We're leveling up. I think we're influencers.
I'll take it, man. I'll take it. Well, and just like that, the season is underway. We've got a recap of the U19 action, first game of the season.
Yep.
Look ahead at Saturday's Minnesota Super Cup opener, along with Saturday's opener for the U21s, and then Sunday's U19 game against Eau Claire's Bateau FC.
Yeah, soccer is happening in Minneapolis, so let's get to it. Oh, but first, John, I got a little old granddad rant.
Yeah, let's do it.
So last week, when we were introducing the U19 team, we were talking about our approach, Minneapolis City's approach to the new UPSL Division I, and you threw a little shade at clubs who play in two or more leagues and play the same team across all of them, or play like their top team in their lower division, just so they can dominate or to make sure they get wins. Dominate at a level that frankly they should be above. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, looking around the results of the last week, you see the UPSL premier season has started for some teams already, even though it starts for us on Saturday. And one of the eye-popping scorelines was 9-0 St. Croix versus Granite City.
Granite City's like, falling off the shelf, man.
And I was like, whoa, what happened to Granite City? So I opened it up. And I knew that St. Croix had already beat Superior City 4-2. So I looked it up. And across those games, their guys Carter Thiesfield and Nathan Donovan have 3 goals and 4 goals apiece. And we're going to talk about it more in a bit, but we saw it at the Nelly a little bit this weekend too. So here's my question, John. Why do that? Why play your top team, your USL2 team, to dominate the likes of Granite City?
I don't know, man. Honestly, unless, and we will get into this a little bit more in depth. So I don't want to say the things I'm going to say in a bit, but we're talking about one club versus the other, but the pretty much the same theory.
Yep.
I don't get it unless it truly is a preseason. But then you are stunting the growth of the core that will be made up of the actual team that will play throughout the season, unless you truly don't have another roster, which I don't believe that's the case for what we're seeing across town in St. Croix. I believe they have a full other roster, or at least a complementary set of players that will be the core of a roster with, you know, your bench guys. And then ultimately we had this weekend, you're filling guys. But I don't know. I mean, I would rather win with a core of the right players than to stack a team just to stack a team. That's mm-hmm. just me.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my question at all of it is like, especially with St. Croix, in the case of the St. Croix, where they also tweeted out that however many guys on the roster had NCAA tournament experience. They're all, so these are college players, right? These are college players that are coming back early or driving up or driving out to play in this game, right? So it's not like they don't have anything else to do. It's like finals coming up. I guess my question is like, where are the youth coming up through your model?
Yeah.
Like if you're an organization that builds development into the foundation of your club, where's the pathway? Like here is a platform, the UPSL, to elevate your young players in a league that's got new teams and plenty of room for a unique roster to develop and grow. And there's your star player from your top team basically out there playing on easy mode. Like who does that help?
It doesn't help anyone. And it's pretty telling of the model.
Yeah.
That you are willing to forego development for your star striker to have a field day.
And I'm not trying to say that everyone should only field a U21
and I'm not either.
Or U19 at this level, because I think you can see it with like Valora, with probably Bateau, with a lot of these teams, Worthington, right? Like they just don't have that capability. They don't have that structure. Mm-hmm. Right? But last weekend, we saw two clubs that make their money on youth development. And one of them makes a lot of fucking money. Basically sending a message to the youth players and their families that like their investment in them is going to stop at high school in favor of winning, what, lower league soccer games? It feels...
Against teams feels they gross. Probably could have beaten.
Yeah, feels gross.
Yep. That's it. I don't have anything more to say about that.
That's my rant.
If I say anything else, I'm definitely getting myself in trouble. And I don't want to do that because there's certain folks across the river that I really do like, but there's certain ones that I think are all absolutely awful. But that's a topic for another day when the microphones aren't recording.
Granddad rant over. Thank you. It's been a while.
Okay. Well, on Sunday, the Crows welcome Joy Athletic. What a great segue we're going to get into here. On Sunday, the Crows welcome Joy Athletic to help us kick off the inaugural U19 era of Minneapolis City. Fans who are around the MPSL days would have recognized this team as they featured a lot of the same players, Nate, that have played together since they entered that league, really that have played together since they were maybe 10 years old or so at Joy of the People. You had a Croydon, you had a Bennett, Kwame, I don't remember. Yep. Danielson Ramos, Micah Folstad, Kudo, Corona Duran, Enright. Those were just a few names. But notably, there was Masango Akale, brother of Makwele Akale, who was a Valencia Academy player. And Masango did play professionally in Greece. So
that was a surprise.
What's that?
That was a surprise to see him pop up.
And not a surprise when watching him play that he's very fucking good at soccer. And I wouldn't mind seeing him wearing a feather, playing in the USL too. But anyways, he played for Joy of the People, as did a cast of characters that we've seen before. And it kind of, we're going to talk about it here in a second, so I won't belabor it, but very similar to what we're seeing across the Premier Division in the UPSL.
Yeah. With a few exceptions, John, City fielded a team that did stick to the U19 structure that we built this team around. One of those exceptions is a goalkeeper, Daniel Sessler, who is a St. Mary's player, and I think he's probably going to be competing for USL 2 minutes, but I think partially due to availability, partially due to the roster that Joy was throwing out there, he got the start. Defenders were Sergio Hernandez, who I'm not familiar with, but it'll be good to get to know him
now.
A little bit. I am now. Maddox Moses, who is a Hamlin. He's a freshman at Hamlin, I believe. Mm-hmm. You've got Joshua Olea Cortez and Owen Bersham, who I think we mentioned last week. He's a Maple Grove player. Midfielders were Miles Ulrich, Simeon Friesen, Colin Vilm, Ethan Lemoyne, and Jabari Kibisu. And our forward, the other exception to the U19 model, was Bernard Acibi Rule, trying to get him game fit coming off of a little bit of a knock, so we wanted to get him some minutes. Once I saw the Joy roster compared to ours, I kind of knew what we were getting into, John. How about you?
Yeah, let's talk about this. maybe a little bit of my own granddad rant here. So I fully understand early season, regardless of league you're in. It's really hard to put a full roster together. It truly is, because typically you have a core. Maybe you don't have a core that'll be there in your side week in, week out until the rest of your reinforcements come. We've seen that for how many years now, Nate? Where yep. you just kind of got to make do. That was not the case with the game we watched. Yes, there were two USL2 players suiting up for our side, but it was two of them. And they were only in the side for two reasons. A, they were available and willing to help out, which you mentioned, Bernard kind of coming off a knock, needing some game minutes. But B, here's the important one. The core of our U19 team, as you know, plays on the same MTA club team, and they had already played Saturday and Sunday before the UPSL match. So to help that, we brought appropriate coverage for load balancing and not to like burn players out. That's not our purpose.
Yep.
So when you think about what we faced versus what people will say, you know, there were two USL2 players in that roster. Yeah, that was out of necessity, not out of luxury, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So on the other side of the fence, it was very clear that either Joy only has one team featuring in two leagues, that being the MPSL and the UPSL Division I, or they are treating a match versus Minneapolis City as their World Cup final and pulled out all the stops with 16 players that I counted on the bench in totality that were there, with only one of them that I know that's under the age of 20. And that was their goalkeeper, who was a member of our Futures program last year. So in my opinion, to kind of close the loop on this one, what I saw, Nate, if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, you got yourself a duck, folks.
Yeah. And so I think when you look at the roster that we put out there, I'm not sure where Sergio Hernandez plays, Maddox at Hamlin, Josh Cortez, not sure there, Owen Maple Grove, Miles Wyzetta, Cy Friesen. I can't remember where he plays. University of Northwestern up there in Roseville. Colin Vilms, Stillwater, Ethan Lemoyne. De La Salle. My point is that these guys,
they're
high school players, and they come from very different programs, different places, right? So it's understandable for me to say that the way the game started was shaky and disconnected, right? These were guys who were not familiar with each other, not sure where each other were going to be on the field. City lined up in what I guess seemed like a 4-4-1-1. You had Miles and Cy in the middle, and Lemoyne and Vilma out wide. Jabari and Bernard were looking to kind of support each other. I think Jabari playing a little deeper in kind of the 10. Mm-hmm. And I think at the start, no one really felt super familiar with where each other would be or should be. And that plays out, you know, in the game film too.
This is total first game feeling out in my eyes. Also, what happened was that players outside of Bernard finally got to realize firsthand that you cannot, under any circumstances at this level, regardless of who you are and who you are playing, hold on to the ball for too long or you will pay. And that's exactly what happened leading up to the first real negative thing that happened in the game and to the squad this season, which you're about to get into.
Yeah, so this kind of unfamiliarity with each other, a little bit inexperience, probably some jitters. Yep. as you get out there and realize, like, oh, this is for real. These guys
live
are
bullets.
Good. Yep. Yep. When you consider the quality of Masango Okale, that really bit us. Bad pass from whoever the right back was to the midfield, about 4 yards in front of him. Cy Friesen couldn't get to it. And instead it's Danielson Ramos that gets to the ball first. Owen Bersham steps and creates a huge pocket of space that Akali just kind of walks into, finds the ball at his feet from Ramos, and is able to just basically walk himself up to net and pass it into the lower right corner. So 1-0, Joy goes up early, and City looked to be in trouble. Because shortly afterwards, a Joy player was brought down just inside the box, and Zinedine Croton steps up to take the PK. But our big man, Daniel Sessler, rises to the occasion. He reads the run-up. He makes a phenomenal save to his left. And I'm going to say, John, this is when the momentum shifted towards a more balanced game and Minneapolis City were able to see the half out and go into the locker room down just one goal. What changed?
First off, that PK was awful.
I think it's so funny. We just talked about PKs last week.
We just talked about PKs last week in our grab bag show. I encourage everyone who hasn't listened to that, that's listening to this, to go back 1 week. We just kind of picked some things out of the hat, and one of my things was penalty kicks. And we mentioned they're hard enough as is, and that we both agree that PKs are hard. You need to step up, pick your spot, have a proper run up. And I'm going to put that one in air quotes, and you smash the hell out of the ball into your, and hope into the corner. And you basically mano a mano, try to beat the keeper. What we saw is Crichton did not. He thought he had outfought Sessler for what would have been, you know, in my opinion, putting Coach Hine inside in a real bad spot, like you mentioned. But instead, it really was that switch that needed to be turned on. And I think that the kids responded really well to change the shape of this match after they were basically gifted an opportunity to leave the window open for them.
Yeah. And so we go into the locker room. Just down a goal, and as the second half started, we saw some changes. So Miles Ulrich, Colin Vilm, I think Ethan Lemoine and Sergio Hernandez were replaced by Ike Duell at center back, Ethan Brown at left back, Axel Martin at forward, and Olin Franswell playing a deep sitting midfield role. Axel moves into a central target man role. Bernard moves out wide. I thought that worked out really well throughout the second half.
It's his natural position, Bernard.
Yep. And these are four guys that come in, John, that play together almost every day. And in my mind, it had an immediate impact in the organization connectivity. Do you agree?
I totally agree. But I also felt like it was combined with the fact that the players that were on before them that stayed on, and they kind of started to figure out where Joy was weak. And they started to kind of increase the speed of play. And with that, getting faster, I think it exposed Joy being very tired. And I think then it started like waves of attack in volume for the 19s.
Agreed.
And I think that is truly where the momentum was. I think it was just kind of the perfect cocktail mixture of, all right, we had 45 minutes and we figured out what this is. We belong here.
Yep.
We made some mistakes. We can clean those up. We can bring on some different pieces that will help clean things up and add something different. And we absolutely can start to go from the back foot to the front foot and start exposing some weakness.
Yeah. And City pulled the goal back quickly. The new shift wins the ball in the middle third. It's Bernard that steps up, intercepts a pass, and his first touch puts it right up to Axel. Axel holds play up a little bit. He lays it right off to Bernard. Bernard drives to net and buries it to the upper left past Drew Mosman, and it's knotted up. And this was, what, 49th minute? Something like that? Yep, so early. All of a sudden, it's a brand new game. It was, and like you said, and it was wave after wave of City attack through a combination, I would say, of great goalkeeping by Daniel Sessler and some additional infusions on the attacking side of the ball that were really beneficial. Elijah Fearing comes in, Julian Browers. It's a hyphenated
Nelson.
Last name.
Nelson.
Julian Browers. Nelson comes in. Each of them forced Mosman to make saves. They were attacking from the right side and the left side. respectively, it felt like City was threatening to win this thing. And I would say at least we had a good chance to draw. What do you think the difference was between that 15th minute, and maybe you already touched on this, the 15th minute and say the 75th minute when it was 1-1 and we were really bringing it to Joy?
Well, Nate, what happened is something that I hoped would happen and is super important for this age group of players. Bernard aside. He did joke on Instagram. He got to check his birth certificate. He was 19 on Sunday. they realized that they can play at this level and play well at this level. And they started to figure out things on their own. So you can only really coach players so far until they have to like start to read the game and start to problem solve and figure things out another way if the first idea isn't working. And as these players start to climb up the competitive ranks, the ones that continue to do that or have the desire to do that, they're going to have to figure out that the first idea typically never works. And what does work is that out of the box thinking and problem solving to explore alternative ways to complete what they initially think is the goal of the first idea. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Mm-hmm.
So what I saw was the ball moved quicker, as I noted earlier, and it was being switched from side to side, where it was very, very direct in the first half. And I don't know if there was like the crutch leaning on, like, we have Bernard up there, we can get kind of direct. But you could even see his playing style in the first half was like, he had to drop deeper, got a little frustrated because the service was like, I'm not going to like go up for, you know, 20-yard long ball headers. I'm not going to start, you know, just in a track meet with the back line. We will start to play. Yep. So you kind of saw like more combination. And instead of being safe, I'll note one other thing. As they were moving the ball sideline to sideline, I thought that was nice. The back line and even Sessler started to be comfortable skipping layers instead of being safe and playing side to side out of the back. And we finally started to see, you know, the pushing around instead of us getting pushed around, we made Joy in the middle and defensive thirds start to feel uncomfortable and start to feel the pressure instead of giving them the respect space that we were giving them kind of in the first 15 to 20 minutes of that.
Yeah, when you talk about, you know, skipping lines, skipping layers, you know, that was a big part of where Roberts Nelson and Fearing were threatening, is that they're able to get the ball forward to Axel. Axel will hold up play and be able to find them, or just diagonal balls mm-hmm. over the top, and those guys can go get it. Like, I think you told me something like, the thing about Elijah is he's got the mind of a goldfish. Like, he'll forget the last time.
He doesn't care about anything.
He'll keep trying it, right? I'll keep making runs. I'll try something else.
The ball will eventually get there if you make the run.
Yep, and it did. And like I said, he had a shot, a great shot, well saved by Mosman. Julian did as well.
He ate my words saying he was going to get the game winner.
Yeah, he almost did. But unfortunately, Joy was able to snatch all 3 points at the death with a viper strike from Akale from deep. I would say Joy struggled to get past the combo of Duel, Bersham, Francois, and Brown all half.
Absolutely.
So Akale decided he'd just let it rip from 30 yards out, and that shot beat Sessler. It just lasered into the upper right corner. It's hard to stop something like that. Like, that was a quality strike, man.
He had a good line on it, and you could see him start to kind of set to leave the ground to kind of lay out for it, but he thought it was going wide. And guess what? It wasn't.
It did not. Yeah. So disappointing in the end, but I thought there was a lot of positives in this initial look at the U19 squad. What were your impressions?
The kids can play, man, and they are relentless when it comes to effort, which is super fun to watch. So I encourage everyone listening, please get out there. I mean, the crowd, we didn't mention the crowd. There's
crowd, you know, maybe great.
200,
I'd say 100, 200 people there.
200. Yeah. People that were out there. They're really fun to watch. Go out and watch them. I think our goal at this level in our club is exposing these younger players to a different soccer, both in tactics, but also in with what types of players they're going to be facing. We've already talked about this, especially when we were kind of doing the lead up into what the league might look like. But we know this league is not going to be super predictable. And we did note that when we were doing the conference preview. But in that, the guys showed, you know, versus likely one of the hardest pieces of competition that they're going to face on the other side this season, in my opinion, with who we saw turn up for Joy.
Yeah.
And with the ball bouncing a couple of different ways, like, that was a winnable game. And it wasn't one of those things that, you know, we talked about what could have been if that penalty would have gone in. You know, there's an opportunity where Joy starts to just have fun and the score line quickly goes from 1-0 to 3-0, or maybe 1-0 to 4-1, mm-hmm. and we're in some deep shit. But it wasn't the case, and they fought back. They like I said, they figured out other ways to try things. They ramped up pressure. I think from a coaching perspective, I didn't see one, you know, in a little critical in Coach Heinen here. Not a lot of things to be critical about in his first match in charge of this group. I thought all of his tactics were sound after that first 15-minute period, which you always knew was going to be a feeling out process, and his substitutions, I thought, all made impact. So really, really nice job by the coaching staff headed up by Scotty Heinen.
Yeah, excited for the season, man. Next up for the U19s is going to be Bateau FC from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Beto are back-to-back WPASL, which is Wisconsin Primary Amateur Soccer League champions.
Why is primary in there?
I don't know. It's maybe the maybe there's a secondary amateur soccer league.
There might be.
Yeah. They're looking to take the next step regionally. So here they are in the USL or UPSL Division One. John, their roster is not online. I looked again today. It's still got like player one coming soon. But from the team photo on their website, this looks like a scrappy Stegman's style side.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Do you know anything about them? What can the boys expect?
I don't know a ton about them, but I do know enough to be a little bit dangerous here. I think they're gonna run into a side that's very experienced from an amount of hours logged on a soccer field perspective. So within that, you're going to see maybe some players that have played together longer periods of time. When you look at our side, there are some guys who have played, like you said, play together every day in their club backgrounds. But I think it's going to be a little bit more different, a little bit older, a little more experienced than what obviously we have being under 19. They did face that in week one against Joy, and they showed they could handle it after some kind of quick growing pains. But what they won't be facing is a former pro striker. Unless there's one living in Eau Claire, which I'm pretty sure I would have known about, who has the speed that they've never seen before, and kind of the trickiness on the ball. But and then really that was the most dangerous thing that they saw in week one. And I don't see that happening in week two. And they should continue to grow as a group from here. But I think that every week in this conference is going to be hard. But Beto across the field is going to, I think, bring things back down to reality from what we're going to expect to see in this conference week in, week out.
All right. So the U19s are going to welcome Beto FC to Edor Nelson Field on Sunday, May 12th at 6 p.m. Remember, the U19 games are always free. So bring the kids, give your wife some peace and quiet on Mom's Day, and come on down to support your Crows. Is that something? I don't know. Is that something moms want? It's just like, it's Mother's Day. Can everyone just leave me alone?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, my wife realistically goes on a girls' trip every Mother's Day.
Yeah. So. If they were honest with their families, isn't that something that would be like, can everyone just shut up today? Yeah,
I want to do what I want to do today in peace and quiet. Yes. So, Nate, we got games on games on games, folks.
Yeah.
the 19s are not the only stop on the soccer train this weekend. You're reigning 2023 UPSL Midwest West Premier Division champions, always going to be a mouthful, start their season this weekend. The team has a new look as longtime caretaker of the Futures program, Jeremiah Johnson, has stepped away from the club. And new man, Josh Roy, who we interviewed on the show a few shows back. Definitely go check that episode out if you want to learn more about Coach Roy and his background and what he wants to do this year with the squad. So he takes the helm as they roll into St. Paul to face the St. Paul Blackhawks, who last year gave the Futures side fits in a very hard-fought draw before we saw the Blackhawks finish fifth in the conference with 5 wins, 3 losses, and 2 draws. Nate, the 21s have been training all winter. They have a really good crop of mostly returners. It's, you know, that kind of go back as far back as 2022, the other Midwest West Division champions. So back to backs with some key additions. So I don't know. Tell me your thoughts on this one and what you expect from Coach Roy and the boys, which I think should be our new tagline for that team.
Roy and the boys, the Roy boys.
Yeah.
I don't. So I guess two things. First things first, the last scoreline I saw from Blackhawks was a friendly they played against the new NPSL team, the Blizzard. And they destroyed them. I think it was like 6-0. So either the Blackhawks is a good club, right? Like they've got guys at the U19 level that can compete. And I'm sure there's some alumni that are coming back from college. Mm-hmm. Some guys that are still kind of kicking around town that haven't really stuck in on anywhere like City or St. Croix, where they're happy to welcome them into their mix for the UPSL. So I think this Blackhawks team is going to be strong. But these U21s, John, it's...
You can play.
we talk about how the MIAC levels up every year, and I'm just... maybe this sounds a little too braggadocious, but I will say a lot of that has to do with the quality of player that Minneapolis City develops and then puts back into the MIAC every year. When you think about Rigo Arellano, when you think about how Hamlin has leveled up, thanks to their
Johnny
specifically
Bear.
Thanks to their Johnny Bear. You've got Tomlinson, Ryder Tomlinson, Ryder Tomlinson, MIAC Rookie of the Year, right?
Aiden Lee. It's the Hermansons.
Yeah, Mena, Tomas Mena,
Diego Pauline. Foster Conlin, Griffin Price.
Oh, Griffin's back.
Jeffrey Richter, Joey Barica, Jordan Ross at
basketball. Is Mitchell gonna stick around?
Mitchell Munzing. You got Mickey Daniel, Mizell Harris.
So you've got an eye on this roster. I've only been able to take a look at what I saw at training here and there. And I'm saying is, like, if you take the best of the best of the MIAC outside of Gustavus and St. Olaf, with a few Gustavus and St. Olaf guys anyway, but those guys can definitely compete at the USL2 level, so that's where they're going. If you take the best of the best of the MIAC, they're playing for Minneapolis City at the U21 level. And it's gonna be a good team this year. It's gonna be a great team this year. That's my prediction.
Roy and the boys,
man. So next up for these U21s, St. Paul Blackhawks, it's an away game at Humboldt High School, Saturday, May 11th at 5 p.m. Not sure what that stream situation is going to look like because, well, one, it's Humboldt High School in St. Paul, but also, two, who knows what the Blackhawks have available. It'll probably be VO, maybe available later on their YouTube. At the same time, we got a conflict because, as we are about to mention in our next segment, Minneapolis City has another game starting at that around that time that most people are going to be focusing on. So if you've got friends or family on the U21s, by all means, get out and support them at Humboldt High School. But Minneapolis City has bigger fish to fry on Saturday.
Yeah, we told you people the chaos is coming, and finally we end the run of it with the kickoff of everyone's favorite state tournament, the second installment of the Minnesota Super Cup. Saturday, as the Crows take on Rochester FC. So for those of you that were under a rock all last year, the Minnesota Super Cup was created inside the mind of John Mortensen, who we also had on the show. You can go back and listen to him and talk about his background and how the tournament came to be and why it's here. But essentially, the Cliff Note version of it is it was a way for us to bring all of the top pre-professional clubs together to lock horns in a World Cup style in-season tournament. And last season saw Med City of the MPSL lift the cup's first crown in the end of the tournament. Ooh. With a back and forth match between the Minnesota United U19 Academy MLS Next team. Med City is no longer with us, but they will forever be the first winner, Nate.
Yeah.
So I never take that away from them.
Yep.
The format's pretty simple. Two groups of three teams. They play each other once in a table-style format, culminating in the top two teams from each group going into the semifinals. And then after that, you all know what happens after semifinals. So the 2024 teams are as such. Group one is Minneapolis City. And I'm just going to list where all these teams come from. So Minneapolis City, as we know, is in the USL 2, UPSL Premier, and UPSL Division 1. Rochester FC, who we're facing, they are another USL 2 team, and they also have a UPSL Division 1 team. They did merge with Med City, so that is where I was talking about them no longer being with us. So they decided, you know, in Rochester, why not just have one club instead of two? So good on them. And then group one finishes out with the MLS Next team from Minnesota United's Academy, the U19s. Group two, our old foes, Duluth FC out of the MPSL, and then St. Croix Legends of USL 2, and also, as we noted, UPSL Premier. And then Force FC out of the MASL, which is the Minnesota Amateur Soccer League, which is a new entry this year, Nate. So giving the state top amateur league pre-professional, I guess you could say, but giving them an entry, which I think is great, allowing some of those teams to have the opportunity to play in this tournament, I think is great. So Force FC rounds out group two.
Do you know if that's something they were kind of just kicking around?
It was always in
the trigger on it. It was kind of in the works, and they pulled the trigger on it because Med City was gone.
I think it wasn't because Med City was gone. It was always going to be part of it.
Oh, because I mean, Med City and technically Med City and Rochester would have both qualified this year because Rochester finished top two
right.
of the Minnesota teams in the USL 2.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so maybe either way, it doesn't matter. They're here and it's going to be great. I think that's awesome.
Yep.
My question on all this, John, and this is, we've talked about this a long time ago. I know we talked about this and it's kind of like, who knows what they're thinking. And I know we don't run Minneapolis City doesn't run the tournament. We don't know what John's thinking or what the organizer's policy is. But it feels to me like this tournament, unless they say you qualified with your UPSL team, so you need to roster your UPSL team's roster. Unless they say that, it just gives such an advantage to Minneapolis City and Rochester. And St. Croix.
Yeah.
And so I hope that we are limited to the rosters that we qualified with.
You are not limited to the roster you qualify with. You are limited to the roster you sign up for within the tournament. There is always going to be the chance that any of these clubs, and it's the reason why in our notes I put down like what leagues these teams are in. There's always an opportunity for any team to draw from anyone within the club. Because the club particularly qualifies within each individual category. Knowing that with the roster turnover of an MPSL, USL2, UPSL team every year, you can't go in with the same group. But like we talked about, you know, and we'll talk about it in a second, you're starting this cup off in the beginning of the season for most of these clubs before they even roll the ball out in their respective leagues. You never know who's going to be there. So in our case, yes, it is advantageous for us because we do have multiple teams, but they're all playing at the same time or the next day. So you really have to create a roster that you can succeed in as a club. So yeah. I get it, but I think you're right. You know, like it's an interesting topic. So it's definitely something that needs to, we should probably have John on and have him talk through it.
That'd be great. It just feels counter to the spirit of it all. Like for the MASL having to basically field an amateur team every year at that, from that level to say, well, we're going to go up against St. Croix and St. Croix, or we're going to go up against Minneapolis City and Minneapolis City qualified because their UPSL team won their league. But these are USL2 players. We're going to end up fielding. Like that doesn't feel fair.
But if you look at it on the other side of the coin, with teams that have clubs that have multiple teams and multiple pre-pro divisions, look at our weekend. We have
and really the line between the rosters is blurry anyway, as we've talked about many times on this, just on this episode, mm-hmm. across St. Croix, Rochester, it doesn't matter who you are, us, the line there really is. It's tough to say these are only USL2 players or only UPSL players. So I get it.
Right, exactly. So as far as a preview of Rochester goes, Nate, I have no clue who or what is going to be there, other than the fact that Med City typically, you know, I mentioned they merged with Rochester FC. Med City did a really great job of recruiting during their days in the MPSL. And I would have to continue to think that with the merger that you'll continue to see some quality players roll into town and a mix of mixing them up with some of the local talent in Rochester that in the past has gravitated towards clubs like ours, maybe Duluth, before the inception of the USL2, 3 years ago. So until we kind of see the game day roster, your guess is as good as mine, Nate, when it comes to what we're going to see.
Yeah. And I was just looking at, my bad. I just had it up. I think Rochester lost their first Division I game.
Yes, they did.
Right. 2-0. And I'm pulling up who that was against as we speak, thanks to the magic of the internet. But yeah, they lost that game 2-0 against Skills FC. So who knows? You're right. We don't really know who's gonna be out there. Maybe they've got some guys waiting. Maybe they weren't doing the thing where they just play their top team at the UPSL Division One level because they were available.
Yeah, I don't think that they were available. To be honest,
how about us? Who's playing for us in the Super Cup? Because that's really what I want to know about. Who's around?
Well, as far as our boys are concerned, we're still seeing players not yet back into the fold as schools close for the summer across the country. But we are seeing some of the talent start to trickle in. Much like last year's Minnesota Super Cup opening roster, it's going to be a mix of who's available and those getting pulled up from the U21s. So you're going to see some movement there. And it sucks that this is how things are, but we've been doing this for how long, Nate? It's nothing new to us. The only person on the planet that knows what's going to happen is likely Carl Craig, and he's off doing his own thing. Actually, probably finishing up training tonight with the group that he is going to put out there. So maybe tomorrow I'll know.
Yeah,
but who knows? So I will say this though. Instead, you know, I do have the inside info of some of the players that have updated their availability that they are in town, and I'm super excited to watch a few of these guys. So to kind of name a few, we'll go with returners off the bat. You're gonna get a chance to see Jonah Garcia, Evan Siefkin. If you follow us on social, Lionel Vang just signed up to make his return back in. Hopefully, we'll see a Vanger or two.
We gotta get the Vanger's only T-shirt back.
I'm gonna wear mine. I already got it washed and sitting out ready for me. Stevie Lamar, Bernard, who featured for the 19s, Carson Pena, and the Kent brothers both are available, so maybe we see that dynamic duo. But as far as newcomers go, this is where I'm getting excited. You know, first and foremost, we're looking forward to see Juan Moreno out of Oral Roberts University, Morgan Olsen from Portland, the German Henry Tophoven, Otis Anderson making the switch over from St. Croix to play with us, and then I always butcher his name.
Sadike.
He'll just go by one name, like Pele. Sadike, to name a few. So I'm excited to see these guys kind of have their official careers start with the Murder.
Yeah, I mean, Juan Moreno, right? National champion winner with Tulsa Athletic, with our friends Tulsa Athletic up here for an internship, which is hilarious that he's like also kind of living near you.
Yeah.
So you get to see him for like lunch. So that's pretty cool. I'm excited to see him and what he can offer. That Tulsa team is so quality.
Yeah.
So that'll be great. Henry Tophoven, I'm interested to see. I saw a lot of Otis Anderson over the last couple of years in my work with Augsburg, but also through Minneapolis City. So that'll be great to have him on our side as well. And Sadike Diabate.
He's just a game changer.
He's just been around, and he's just so good. And he's one of those guys where every time we play against him, or every time I see him, I look at you, John, and it's like, why don't we have him?
Right. Yeah, I know.
And you're we fucked up.
He went off to University of Dayton and just like on fire, lit his career up. So he started off really well with Dayton, and I think it was a really good move for Sadike, like getting out of the Twin Cities and kind of flying his trade somewhere else. And now being back for the summer, having, you know, the year of NCAA soccer under his belt, I think is going to be really exciting to watch.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Minneapolis City is going to kick off our pursuit of the 2024 Minnesota Super Cup this Saturday, 6 p.m. at Edor Nelson Field. Tickets are available online at mplscitysc.com, and we will be streaming this game for those who can't make it down on our YouTubes. And that'll do it for this week's show. Thank you to our longtime show sponsor, footballstadiumprince.com. Our friends at footballstadiumprince.com are always expanding their soccer-focused t-shirts, their designs, their prints, and more. And don't forget to use the code CROWS10. Get 10% off everything you purchase. And remember, all U.S. orders ship here from these United States. There are no international shipping charges incurred. Remember, Minneapolis City is a 501c3 organization, so you can definitely feel good that your membership doubles as a charitable donation to a club that does good. Memberships for the 2024 season are still available. Don't wait any longer. Snag yourself that seat in the stands and get some sweet swag, all for a price that really is much better than any other club's price of entry. head to mplscitysc.com and get yours today. Get yours today and you get all the Super Cup games. You get every U21 home game still. You get every other USL2 home game. U19s are free. That's just a bonus. So remember, you can always find us on Twitter X at The People's Pitch. And you can even email us if you have any questions or topics you want covered on the show. mcscpodcast@gmail.com. And you can find us on Instagram. We're going to start posting on Instagram this week. People's Pitch. I guess it's The People's Pitch. I'll tell you right now.
I don't know. Yep. You set it up.
I got it set up. It's The People's Pitch. Search for us. You can also connect with the, you can, yeah, you're following. You're, of course, you can also connect with the club itself on Twitter at MPLSCitySC. And that's all for this week. God, that was a lot. I'm Nate. That was John. It was a lot this week. It's going to be a lot next week. It's going to be a lot for the next 8, 9, 10 weeks. The soccer content is pouring in. We're going to be back next week with a Minnesota Super Cup recap. We're going to have reactions and previews of the next U19 and U21 match, as well as getting you prepped for the USL2 opener in Milwaukee versus the Bavarians. I'm excited. I'm going.
Yep.
So much soccer. And you got hoofed.
Got hoofed.